So now in chapter 12, we are continuing along with this whole process. And 10 and, what page is that on, Kira?
32 or
bottom numbers?
Or 47.
47 on the bottom numbers there. So we said that in chapter 10 we talked about the tzaddik and the definition of a tzaddik. And in chapter 11 we defined the rasha. So now chapter 12, so the only thing that's left to define is the Beinoni.
The Beinoni, figure out who that is.
Okay, and he will concern himself with the Beinoni, the definition of the Beinoni, through 12, 13, and 14.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Of course, he's spending a lot of time on that because it's not a real the whole point of talking about a tzaddik because we're not going to get there anyway.
Yeah.
And there's not a whole lot of point talking about the rasha because what could you say already?
It's just bad.
Right.
Well, you slice it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot to say. I mean, you know, so that's why 11 is such a short chapter.
Yeah, granny, get you going.
Okay. 12 and 13 are both long. Okay, because we're just defining what first and 12 what a Beinoni is, and 13 how a Beinoni operates.
Yeah.
Okay. The Beinoni, what's a Beinoni? Who sha'olam ein hara goyver kol kach lichvois es tiirakatana. The evil doesn't dominate so much to conquer the small city, which is the body, lislavish baguf, to enclose itself in the body. Meaning, his nefesh bahamas never gains dominion over him. Lahachtiyo, to make him sin. That means with a Beinoni, it never happens. Because if it happens, he's not a Beinoni. He's now a Rasha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We're going to have to define that a Beinoni is a person who never sins.
Yeah.
Okay? There is a...
And that's what we're shooting for, right?
That's what we're shooting for.
Okay.
Listen, if you think small, you get small.
Yeah. Okay, good.
There is a story, I don't know if I told this story when, since you've been here, that the after the Chafetz Chaim passed away, the Friedrich Rebbe, the previous Lubavitch Rebbe, said that the Chafetz Chaim was a true Beinoni. Okay? This caused consternation
really?
Among his students in Radin. Okay?
Wow.
And it happened that some rabbi from the Chafetz Chaim's yeshiva met up with Lubavitcher and said, how is it that your Rebbe called my Rebbe a Beinoni? My Rebbe was a tzaddik. So he said, Lubavitcher answered him. He said, let me ask you a question. The Chafetz Chaim, do you think he ever had like a machshava zora? Do you think he like in like the middle of davening or something? It says, the Gemara that one of the things you'll never can stop yourself from is thinking things in the middle of davening. So it must have been, yeah, he must have had machshava zoras in the middle of davening. And he says, good. Now let me ask you a question. He wrote lots about speaking lashon hara. But did you ever think it happened that he slipped? And he said, well, maybe a little avik lashon hara, something, you know, because it's such a, it happens automatically, such a thing. And he says, the Chafetz Chaim, do you think he ever maybe did like a something, some misdeed, something small? You know, he says, well, there's nobody, I would imagine, yeah, he must have done some small misdeed. So he said to him, you just called your Rebbe a Rasha.
Yeah.
And this tzaddik that, the Beinoni, that my Rebbe called your Rebbe, was a higher level of person than the tzaddik that you call your Rebbe.
Very good.
Because what you're saying is like you said in the beginning, in the middle of the first parak, is that according to the Shulchan Aruch, that if a person does 51% good deeds, he's a tzaddik. That means that what? 49%, he's not doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Beinoni, by definition, now according to Tanya, That's why whenever you hear the people talking about it, they say the Benoni and the Tanya. They always refer to it as the Benoni and the Tanya, because the Benoni and the Gemara is the guy who's 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which I should hope that average Joe should hope for strive for more than 50% accomplishments and 50% downfalls. Yeah.
Mm.
So he says. So the Beinoni is that he never sins. The Heinish says Shloisha Levushi Nefesh Abahamis. That means the three garments of his animal soul. Shehei Machshava Dibro Maisa. That they are thought, speech, and action. Shemitata Klipa. Which come from Klippa. That means the animal we talked about before in chapter 9, as to actually in chapter 6, as to what the animal soul is, and even in the Jew, okay, so the Jew has it possible to elevate his animal soul, and that's one of the things that you have to do while you're here. One of the purposes that we're here is the soul comes down into the body to elevate the body and the animal soul and his portion in the world. So, but that means to say that at least the animal soul is elevatable. But it's not elevated until you elevate it.
It, right.
Yeah. Until it's elevated, by you elevating it, it's down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's deriving its nurture through the forces of evil, through Klippa.
Right.
Okay, so like he says we have nice animals, we're Rachmanim and Baishanim and Gemel Chasadim. We like to do good things for people, we have Rachmanis on people. You know, we're humble people, so that we have nice animals, but an animal is still an animal.
Absolutely.
So, by the Benoni, there's never any play. He's always on guard. So, aside from the fact that it's really tough to be a Benoni, because he has to be, there's only one way that a person cannot think things wrong. And that's to always be consciously thinking things right. Because as soon as you put your brain in idle,
it goes to
those now falls into the category of Machshava Zoros.
Right.
Okay, like the expression, I stopped to think and forgot to start.
Yeah.
Okay, so the...
That happened about 1962 with me.
You know what they say, Akiva, if you can remember the 60s, you weren't there.
Exactly.
So the animal soul is still an animal. That's the point that he wants to make. The thought, speech, and action, the animal can't do anything. The animal's caged. Is what the Benoni is doing. But the animal's still a wild animal.
Yeah.
And the animal soul never dominates over the godly soul to enclose itself into the body and the brain and the mouth and all the other parts of the body to cause them to sin and to make them impure. Chas v'sholem. Okay, which is the goal of what the animal soul's trying to do. You know, it's a very interesting thing that the Alter Rebbe throughout the Tanya doesn't consider it to be a war between the Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov. You get mentioned there. There are mentions of Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov. Because as soon as you say the word Hara, the evil inclination, so now you're thinking bad. People don't do bad. Unless you're a chainsaw massacrist, people really don't do bad things. Okay. We do animalistic things. We're in the pursuit of pleasure, just like an animal.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's
okay.
True.
So we're it's an animal thing going on, and even that, you know, like you said, if it's even if it's tzarchei haguf, if the only reason why a person is eating because he's hungry,
yeah,
cows eat also because they're hungry.
Right.
The difference is that a cow stops eating when it's not hungry, as opposed to a human being.
Yeah.
We just keep eating.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yeah, I know.
There's food on the plate.
I'm there.
There's food on the plate.
There.
There's got to be money in the checkbook. I've still got checks.
Rakshleish levush nefesh lekif kis. Only the three garments of the godly soul. Haim levadam mislabshim beguf. They alone are what is enclosed in the body. Shemachshava divir ma'aseh shel Torah mitzvos haTorah. That they are the 613 commandments of the Torah. So all the things that this person is doing is somehow tied into a mitzvah or serving Hashem. Mm. And everything that he's saying is somehow tied into a mitzvah and serving Hashem. And everything that he's thinking is somehow tied into a mitzvah and serving Hashem. That's all he does all day long. That's what this Beinoni does. Mm. Okay, so aside from being tremendously hard, because you got to know a lot to be able to sit and think all day long.
Yeah.
About Torah thoughts. That's why it says in Pirkei Avos, Ein Bur Chassid. Okay, no, Ein Am Haaretz Chassid, excuse me. An ignorant person can't be pious because he doesn't know what to think about.
Yeah.
You gotta learn. Okay, so aside from that, did you have to have what to think about, which meant that a person has to work on himself such that he's learned so much that he can now review it in his mind constantly. I think it'd be pretty boring, yeah, existence, if you ask me. I'm putting that on tape, sorry. It's like all day long, I'm going to do a study of Torah? No, I'm joking. That is our ideal we're headed for. The reason why people aren't Beinonis, bottom line, is they don't want to be. It's as simple as that.
Yeah,
it's true. They don't want to be. You know, you have to put that extra effort out. And it's a lot easier not to.
A lot easier to float.
Yeah, just kind of slide through. Mm. You know, so I'm tutoring a kid now in Gemara. Mm. And he's just kind of like, he's not like tuned in. Mm. Okay, I said, okay, read the Gemara. So you can read the Gemara.
Yeah.
But he's not into it.
He's not there.
He just doesn't, it's not clicking.
He's life's just on the like, way home.
Yeah, he's just like he does it, you know, and maybe one day, I mean, he's a young kid, so maybe one day he'll suddenly have this epiphany and like go, oh, yeah, right. Mm. You know, it's just like happened the other day. So after I had read the Gemara to him and I explained it to him, and then he read it, I said, okay, now tell me what you just said. Okay, it was a small piece of Gemara, like 10 lines of Gemara, mm. but it was intricate. It was a statement, a question, a refutation, an answer to the refutation, and an alternate answer to the refutation. Mm. Okay, all that in 10 lines. So I said, okay, say. So he said it. I said, you know what you just did? I said, you just learned a piece of Gemara by heart. So suddenly his eyes just suddenly like became unfogged. It was like really, really interesting to watch. The fog just kind of lifted. I could see like his eyes becoming clear. Oh yeah, I just like memorized a piece of Gemara right now. It's like something I hadn't thought I could do. I mean, memorize Gemara, you know. So just gotta keep working at it a little bit at a time. The Beinoni never did a transgression all of his days. V'lo yaver lo'olam, nor will he do anything wrong all of his days. V'lo nikra lov shem rasha afilu sha'achas rega achad kol yamav. And you can never ascribe to him the title Russia, even for one moment, all of his days. Because he's a Beinoni.
Right. Gee.
Okay, so this week I'll be a Beinoni. Next week I'll take it easy, I'll be a Russia. And you know what? He's not a Beinoni now.
Really? You think?
Okay. So what's the difference between him and a tzaddik? He's not doing anything wrong. On paper, a tzaddik and a Beinoni look exactly the same.
Yeah.
You'd never be able to tell the difference. You see him walking in the street, they're both thinking Torah and talking Torah, and you know, they're totally devoted to the cause. And from our perspective, they look quite similar. But he says, "Mahus va'atz nefesh elokis." But the essence of the godly soul, which is the eser b'china seha, which are the 10 aspects of the soul, which he said back in chapter 3, that the 10 aspects of the soul correspond to the 10 spheres. Are you familiar with the 10 spheres?
10 sefirot.
Yeah, the sefirot. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So our soul also is comprised of 10 sefirot, and that's one of the explanations of the verse. Let's make man in our image.
Right.
It's just like our soul is patterned after the spheros of Itzilus. Okay. So the essence of this soul, which is comprised of 10 spheres, they don't have absolute dominion over the body. He's still got an animal soul. Mm. The animal soul is caged, but it's still a wild animal.
Mm.
There was an alter chassid who one of these like Lebedick little guys. I don't think the guy was 5 feet tall. His name was Elio Reitblatt. He was what the Stalinists did to him, you know, and he survived, he got out, and he was one of the Mashpiyim in 770. He used to Fabrang for the Bachram. And just how little was he wore the same size tallis cotton that I wore, because Lubavitch had this thing about wearing a size 26.
Yeah.
It came down to his knees. Okay. It was really, he was really a tiny person. Okay. And but very smiley eyes, very liberal, and no one ever messed with Elio Reitblatt.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so someone asked him by a Fabrengen, why is it that the animal soul, the Yetzer Hara, is referred to as an old foolish kink?
Hmm.
And he said, because even when he's old, he was like in his late 80s, because even when he's old, he's still a fool.
Indeed.
So the animal soul's not going away just because you want it to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's still there.
It's a little disappointing, by the way.
Burning. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
It's still burning. The animal soul still does what it wants.
It's true.
It's still trying to do what it wants.
Mm.
It's not getting there because it's caged. Ki'im bi'itim izumanim. He says, but specific times, prepared times, k'mobishas kriya shma tefillah, like the person's sitting, he's davening, and before he davens, he does what it says in Shulchan Aruch, and I think it's Siman Tzadik Beis, Tzadik Gimel, that it says there that a person has to sit and meditate and think about the greatness of Hashem for an hour before davening and spend an hour davening. And this is, he's doing this, and he's really in the groove, and he's focused such that when he says, b'chol levavacha, with all your heart, even his animal soul is saying, yeah, I like this. Because you remember, what is it that, what's the impetus behind the animal soul is pleasure.
Pleasure, right.
And if a person can't get into it, so davening is also pleasurable. The animal soul might not understand that davening is death to the animal soul. The Baal Shem Tov introduced this idea.
Mm.
The great concept behind davening, what's supposed to be accomplished during davening. Before the Baal Shem Tov, so people looked in Shulchan Aruch. What does it say in Shulchan Aruch? That before you can go eat, you have to daven. Before you can learn, you have to go daven. Before you can go to business, you have to daven. So what's davening? Davening is the conduit to eating, going to work, and learning. That's right. What people consider davening to be. Right. Just a conduit to get there, because it says you got to do this first. So comes the Baal Shem Tov and says, no. Davening is a thing for itself, and davening is the greatest tool that we have for refining the animal soul.
For refining the animal soul.
Yeah, because if a person is going to take time in davening, first of all, it will pirish amilos. The person should understand the words of the prayers that they're saying, so right. It doesn't just become
right. An
exercise in monosyllabic expressions.
Mm.
One syllable at a time, mm-hmm. which is basically what it is, however mm-hmm. fast or slow it may be. But you understand the meaning behind the davening. That's mm-hmm. first of all, and very little. Right. That's why we have English Siddurim, that's why we have linear Siddurim, that's why we have intralinear Siddurim.
Right.
Okay.
Was that your door?
No, that was...
Okay, doesn't matter.
But the Baal Shem Tov says, a couple of things about davening. There's a lot of things about davening. Baal Shem Tov says that when a person davens, he should consider the word that he is about to say as an old friend who he's saying goodbye to, he'll never see ever again.
Hmm.
And think how the person would be, the relationship, the feeling the person would have when they are about to say goodbye to this person.
Hmm.
Okay, that's what it is to be, because you're never going to say this word again. Tomorrow you're going to say, oh, I'm going to say the word, the same word. No, tomorrow's not the same word. Tomorrow's tomorrow's word.
Right.
It's on the same page of the prayer book that you use, in the siddur that you use the same one today, but it's a different davening. Because right. If it would be the same davening, we don't need you to daven the same davening you did that yesterday.
Right.
We need you to do today's davening today, and tomorrow's tomorrow's, and yesterday's was yesterday. So, the... The Baal Shem Tov also says that a person during Shemina Esrei should focus on one character trait that they don't like about themselves. Just one. Not the whole. No, we're not asking you to jump on the roof over here.
Yeah, okay.
One character trait. I don't like this about myself.
Uh-huh.
And dive into Hashem, please Hashem, I'd like to have this character trait changed or refined. And do that 3 times a day for a month.
For a month. Uh-huh. Okay, go ahead.
And at the end of the month, assess themselves.
Yeah.
Have they improved in that trait? And the Baal Shem Tov said, most likely he will have refined himself, but if not, take another month. By the end of the 2nd month, for sure a person should see some sort of a change. And since really the person's already changing, so then the change doesn't have to occupy their davening so much. Find something else that you don't like.
Uh-huh.
And then move on to that. Do that for, I don't know, 80, 90 years.
Yeah.
And by that time, you'll be, you know,
Maybe by then,
you might be refined. Yes.
Maybe by then, you'll think about davening. Okay. Wow.
Okay, so it's a tool for refining out on just the very davening
itself. This gets encouraging later, right?
Why?
I was just fishing.
Yeah, listen, you know, there's only one way to motivate a Jew.
Yeah.
You stand and you yell at a guy, at a Jew. Okay? You tell him you're a this, you did this wrong, and you deserve fires and Gehenna and punishments and all this. That doesn't do it for Jews. Jews say, you tell a Jew I'm going to go to hell. What is he going to tell you?
Yeah.
And I'll see you there too,
buddy. Yeah, no. Yeah, so.
The only way to get to a Jew is to make him feel guilty. See what you did? See what you could be doing.
Yeah.
That's the way you get to a Jew.
Mm.
So, anyway, so, but in addition to that, so the Friedrich Rebbe has there's a moment of the Friedrich Rebbe that the Friedrich Rebbe says that the davening is like a ladder, is the expression, you know, the Sulamites of Arts, the davening is like the ladder with the rungs on the ground, the feet on the ground and the top reaching to the heavens.
Yeah.
It's a ladder of 4 rungs. You have the Birchas HaShachar and Psuki de Zimra. That's one.
Mm-hmm.
The Birchas Shema, the blessings before the Shema. The Shema, and the Shema Ne'esrei.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the 4 rungs. And anything after that is you're coming down the ladder already.
Mm-hmm.
So it says during the morning blessings in the Psuki de Zimra, it's up till Yishtabach. So what the davening is doing is it's taking this unformed blob of our animal soul, this nebulous mass, you might say, and shaping it into a usable commodity. That's what's happening. That's why we sing all these, like the Psuki de Zimra is mostly talking about what's going on in all the worlds. Hashem takes care of everybody and gives them food, and Hashem, you know, listens to the prayers of the people, and we're going to praise Hashem, and we have the splitting of the sea, which is something which happened in a physical world to show Hashem's, how involved Hashem is in the world. That's something that the animal soul can relate to, and the animal soul now becomes like a defined entity. The blessings of the Shema are used to like hollow out the animal soul to make it a vessel for holding godliness.
Mm-hmm.
By the time the person gets to the Shema, that vessel is filled with godliness. And Shemaina Esrei, the vessel's destroyed because the person is just standing in a state of total abnegation in front of Hashem.
Mm-hmm.
He's not there anymore, it's just Hashem. So now, if a person is going to do that, and do that on a regular basis, so it has to have a very strong effect on the person's animal. Because if a person's doing that in davening, then they're not going to be coarse and grub and boorish, because they're spending so much time working on improving themselves.
Mm.
And that's the tool that davening has. So he says that at times like davening, for example, So then the person could be exactly like a tzaddik. Because what's a tzaddik doing when he's davening? He's totally focused. He has a flaming love for Hashem. The rest of the world is not important whatsoever. It's just the relationship between him and God. So the Beinoni could do that too. And in doing so, the animal soul says, yeah, I like this. Mm-hmm. I'll go with this. This is fine. This is enjoyable. I like doing this. Okay? Mm. At the time of davening is a time when a person is using their head the most. Lamaila. This is in a time when Hashem is relating to him and bestowing upon him this level of divine intellect, you might say. Mm. That's one of the reasons why it is that we wear tefillin when we daven. Tefillin are like radio receivers, you might say. Mm. They're there in order to facilitate drawing down, it talks about in the Kabbalah, the Dalid Meichin, the four quote-unquote brains of Hashem, meaning Chachma Vitzilus, wisdom of the world of emanation, and Bina, understanding of the world of emanation. And then Das is broken into two, the intellectual love and fear of Atzilus, into the person's own wisdom, understanding, knowledge. And a tefillin, for example, for sure have a refining effect on a person's thought process. Hmm. Okay? So, this is a time, the davening is a time when you relate to Hashem, and that's why it says that of all the mitzvahs, that the tefillin spark fear in among the nations. Hmm. That's what it says in a pasuk in Maamar Chazal, I don't remember. But people get scared when they see tefillin.
Right.
2 weeks ago, a 17-year-old put on tefillin in an airplane and they did an emergency landing.
Right.
What kind of thing has this guy got on?
Yeah.
Okay. And it happened to me once too. I was flying to Berkeley via Houston on a Continental Airlines.
Yeah.
Back in 1978.
Yeah.
Okay. And the plane from Newark to Houston left at 6 a.m.
Right.
So what happened is I didn't think. I got up when the plane was up in the air and I started putting on my tefillin. Mm-hmm. And this Houston-based stewardess came up to me and said, "Sir, what are you doing?"
I understand entirely. Yes.
And I couldn't talk because I was in the middle of putting on my tefillin.
Yes.
So I gave her the 1 second sign and she freaked out.
Yeah.
I went and called the captain. This is before people were blowing up planes.
Yes,
you know, so
indeed, yes.
Otherwise, I probably would have gotten tackled.
Right.
So the captain came out, and I kind of looked. He was supposed to be the bouncer. He was 5'5 and weighed 145 pounds.
Right, yes.
Okay, and what are you going to do? By that time, I had my tefillin on.
Right.
So that time, I laced into both of them.
Yes.
Okay, how could this be? This is a major corporation. You have people flying all the time, and you're not involved with, you should have sensitivity training, and you should know that these are prayer items, and you should know, and this shouldn't be a thing that's such a shock to you. You know, that's what I've really put on it. It really amazes me that in 2010,
right,
you still have stewardesses that are...
that don't have a clue.
That are freaking out because some 17-year-old kid is putting on an airplane.
Right.
After I got done, so she came over to me and she said, "Well, I must apologize, sir. You just got to understand, we get kind of nervous when people start strapping things onto their bodies." You know, so...
Yeah, that was back then.
That was 1978, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, really.
Wow. So...
Yes, indeed.
What were you doing?
So...
So
now whenever I fly, I always tell the stewardesses, as soon as I get on, I'm a religious Jew, and
yes,
I have to do my morning prayers, and I got these implements, and one of them looks like a blanket,
yes,
and the other things look like these strap things that I put on my hand and my head, not to worry, these are prayer items.
Yes, indeed.
So,
yes. I'm going to talk to God.
Right. I'm going to get this. Make sure this plane gets there.
I wouldn't want to say that either.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. you'll be in cuffs in that time.
Yes. I was putting mine on. Yeah, indeed. I was putting my phone on the break room work, and some guy comes in and he goes, "Don't do it, man. Don't shoot up." he knew what was going on. Oh, and then another girl says she thought I would like hurt myself or something. She goes, and I was putting him on. She goes, "What happened? What happened to you?" And I was like.
I did. I had some
guy. I have no clue.
Looked like I had some sort of, you know, apparatus, like
right, an exactly. Accident or something. You know, yeah, like you, this is like to fight epilepsy or something. Maybe it does. Yes, but yes.
I had some guy ask me if I'd hurt myself, and you just kind of look at him.
No. So, and it's an amazing thing. And why is it that the tefillin have that effect? Is because you're tuning in. It's like beam me up, Scotty.
Yes,
that's what the tefillin are doing.
Yes.
And you don't feel it? No, okay. You know, it would be worse if you didn't have the tefillin on.
Yeah.
How you wouldn't feel it.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, there's a book out that was written, I don't know, in the 60s. It's called Nine and a Half Mystics, written by a Reform rabbi who, after he retired, became from.
Mm-hmm.
It took him 40 years to become from.
Figured out, yeah.
But, you know, he had a job, you know, and he wanted to make sure he got his pension and whatnot. So he went in, he had yechidus like 3 times with the Rebbe, and each one was like more than 2 hours long.
Wow.
And this is back in the 60s when he wrote this book. Wow. And at one point he was like, after he had the yechidus, and after the yechidus he was asking somebody a question, some old chassid, he was asking him a question. So the chassid looked at him and said to him, wait a minute, did you put on tefillin today? He said, no. He said, if you had put on tefillin, you would never have had that question. And just immediately rolled the guy's sleeve up and put, he said, wait a minute. He said, never mind, wait a minute. We're putting on, he put on the tefillin.
So. Never mind, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's mitzvah mobiles.
Yeah. The gam lamata who shas the kaishal l'chol adam. And down here belong is a very down here below the time of davening is a very appropriate time for everybody. Sha'az mikasher chabad shelo laHashem, because then the person is putting connecting his intellect to Hashem. Lahamik daitu begedoy l'sein say baruch hu. The person's what he's supposed to think about is he's really supposed to concentrate with his das. Now the das is the hardest faculty of the intellect to tap into, because chachma is just a little flash of inspiration. Those things come.
Yeah.
Bina, you got to work on. You understand things. You're taking it and you're taking a concept and an idea and developing it and extrapolating it and concretizing it a bit. You know, just really figuring out what this idea is. Das is
knowing it.
What's this got to do with me? That's already hard, because when you have intellectual exercises, it could remain an intellect. There's a new book that just came out. I don't recommend it. It's called Open Secret by a professor, Elliot Wolfson. I had him on my show this last week, and I read the book. I was in New York, so on flying to New York, I read half of it, and flying from New York, I read the other half of it. The notes are quite extensive. It makes up about a little more than a third of the book is notes, because this guy's a big philosophy professor. And basically it took me about 3 or 4 chapters into it before I realized what the point of the book was. The point of the book is that there is no point. There's no point to the book. What's the point of the book? Is that he spent time studying Hasidic philosophy, and this is how he understands Hasidic philosophy.